Welcome to Changing Futures, the podcast aimed at helping Birmingham's most vulnerable people live more fulfilled lives. In this series, we'll explore the importance of lived experience when working with people in the areas of homelessness, substance misuse, mental health, and reoffending. Acknowledging the link between trauma and later behaviour, how these issues can affect any one of us, but that some individuals are more at risk than others. We'll hear from those whose lives have been greatly improved by the work of Birmingham Changing Futures Together and learn how those people have been let down in the past by the services and systems set up to help them. The series will explore the multiple and complex, often unmet needs of individuals and focus on the benefits of lived experience in service design and delivery and collaboration. In this episode, we explore why collaboration is so important, hearing how services have previously failed individuals due to siloed working, and discuss the positive effect as well as evidenced results of working collaboratively across a wide range of organisations and services. Natalie Allen, the Programmes Director for Birmingham Changing Futures Together, explains why collaboration is so important.
When you have somebody who has multiple and complex needs, they are in a situation where in order to move towards a fulfilled life and to engage with the services that they might need in order to do that and to access support, they're in a situation where they have to engage with multiple organisations at any one time. Probably when they are feeling at their most vulnerable, and it's most likely that they feel unable to do that, and that's a really big ask for them. And so what we often found is an individual would go to a service that they required. So for example, if someone had complex needs, they might go to a homelessness service. And historically, what might happen is that that homelessness service would only look at the individual's homelessness and would make a decision on the support provision available, the type of accommodation that they might offer to that person, purely based on their homelessness situation. And what happens there is that all the other needs and all the other issues that that person is facing at that time aren't considered. So an example being that if somebody maybe had quite severe and enduring mental health or maybe was trying to come off substances or maintain their recovery from substance misuse, just purely looking at their homelessness, you might think that they could be put into an emergency hospital, for example. But actually, what our service users tell us is that might be the worst place for them to be to support them with their recovery from substance misuse and with their mental health. The offer of accommodation they might need might in fact be something quite different. So sometimes what happens sort of within the system, one of those sort of unintended consequences, I guess, is that we can actually make somebody's situation that little bit worse or sometimes a lot worse by not understanding quite basically them as a whole person. So one of the first things that we as a partnership have been trying to achieve is really get that message out there that whatever service you are delivering, there is almost an accepted responsibility that we look at the whole person and we look at their whole needs and we use that to make the best decision about that person's support offer, and that we engage that person in that decision-making process so that the support offer on the table is one that is actually suitable to all of their needs.
My name is Elena Raybould. I'm one of the programme coordinators on Birmingham Changing Futures, and I focus on No Wrong Door. So No Wrong Door is basically what it says on the tin, really, that anybody that goes into a service shouldn't be turned away. So regardless if that person isn't eligible for that service, someone actually there could help them to get to the right service. So it's really an approach and a way of working for people with multiple needs. One of the things that we notice and where the gap is in terms of provision is that actually everybody's focused and really silo working. So actually they're working in ways that, okay, well, this is my service, this is what I do, and it doesn't really matter what everyone else is doing. But I think where we are now in this climate is that you can't actually work in that siloed way, because actually people come with lots of issues and stuff, and they're all kind of interconnected. So the thing with the network is that, you know, it's built there to kind of have that kind of approach where you're actually, yes, I know that that service does that, I don't do it, but we can connect to another service. So that's what it's there for, really.
And do you see it maybe making somebody's path to a better future? Do you see that path being a little quicker, maybe?
Yes, so that's one of the the things is that actually making it quicker and making it easier for someone to access the services, and so the outcomes are better for them because they can actually access the services quicker and the services can more likely come to them rather than them having to search where those services are. We've got the Navigator service, and what we found with the group is that there was a gap between actually people getting to the right service. So they might say, okay, well, I know that you need to go here, but I might not have the capacity to actually physically take you. So we have a Navigator service which is connected to No Wrong Door. And so if someone needs to access a service but they're not sure about how to engage with that service, or just may need some handholding to a particular service, they can help them to go there. So that's one of the things that we as a group decided that where the gap was. I think previously what used to happen is that you used to come top down, you'd get a new service and the decision would be made, and actually as a group they found that there was a gap there, and so we've actually implemented that service to stop people falling through the gaps. You can phone them up and say, actually I've got someone here on the day and they need this service, could you take them to so and so, or they can give it an 8-week support just to support the engagement into the service, because we do know actually from service users that it can be quite daunting going to a new service, you don't know what it's like, and actually the Navigator can advocate for them to kind of engage them into the service. It is a short term approach, but it is there to kind of give that kind of hand holding just to get into the right service.
And once they've got that engagement, hopefully they'll
They'll stay there, and I think, you know, that was really something that was missing, and we've added that, and actually, you know, at the moment it's actually quite full in terms of capacity wise, so we know it's something that's needed for people.
Let's hear from one of those navigators. Tyrone, who has lived experience, shares an example of the work in practice when the probation service connected him to a client.
The client was heavily involved in substance misuse. He was street homeless. He had mental health issues as well. So the probation officer asked me to speak to this client, spoke to the client, come up with a bit of an action plan there and then of what we could do with him. First of all, we housed him in a shared accommodation just to give us time to get other services involved. So once he was stable in his accommodation, we then got CGL involved. He was put onto a script, so that kind of helped him with his heroin addiction. Linked him in with mental health services, the community mental health team, so we got his mental health, so he got diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And then after a few weeks, he was stable on his script, he wasn't using any illicit substances, his mental health was starting to get a little bit better, and then we got him into a recovery housing. He then started attending mutual aid meetings and his well-being was a lot better than what it was, and he's managed to maintain his tenancy, and now he's looking to move on and he's looking at doing some education.
What other services and agencies beside the probation service have you seen good results with working along collaboratively?
So we've had good results. Well, CGL is a really good one that we have good results with, because we can refer into them and they can more or less get back to us within a week of referring into them.
What is CGL?
So Change Grow Leave, so it's for alcohol and substance misuse. With a lot of our clients, they have got some substance misuse issues, so it's working with them. We get to see them get what they need within that service, so we don't only just say, okay, here's an appointment, you must go to this appointment. We will actually set the appointments up, we'll pick the client up, we'll take him to that service, and then when they're engaging within that service, then we'll take a step back there. We work with our clients for up to 8 weeks. So, and then if we feel like the client needs more support, more intense support than that, then we'll refer into different agencies that's got a longer period of time to work with that client.
And I suppose when you first start working with the client as a navigator, they're probably scared and reluctant to get involved with some of the services. do you think without you they may not go along to those appointments?
Yeah, I think definitely some of them have been let down in the past. They haven't got much trust within services and stuff, and it's about empowering that client and saying, with me, myself, I've got lived experience myself, so I can understand where they're coming from sometimes, and I'll just try and reassure them that we'll follow the process with them. Just try and make them feel a little bit better about it, explain what the service does and what's going to be expected, and just trying to make it a little bit more easier for them.
Collaboration is working according to those currently using it, but what about evidenced results?
Hello, I'm Jan Pushak and I am the Learning Evaluation Coordinator for Birmingham Changing Futures Together. We are currently doing a piece of evaluation on the No Wrong Door, or the larger theme of the programme, which has taken in some No Wrong Door evaluation. So staff were surveyed, service users themselves were spoken to and surveyed, stakeholders were spoken to and surveyed. Just a couple of initial things that are just starting to come back to us now, that from the staff survey, over three quarters of staff now believe that services are better connected in Birmingham, which is obviously for us a great thing, as one of the aims of No Wrong Door is to better connect organisations together. From the service users spoken to, over three quarters agreed that the main services they had dealings with have put them into contact with other services that they needed. Again, something that's obviously crucial to the No Wrong Door approach, and something that previously, when we've spoken to service users themselves, have said that it was one of the sort of the negatives that has come out, the lack of partnership working, the lack of knowledge that individual organisations would have on other organisations. So the fact that now three quarters of our service users this year that have been interviewed recently have said that the main services putting them into contact with other services is obviously a really positive thing. We've also got, for instance, a case study from a guy who was working with CGL. He was street homeless, he was struggling with drugs. He had to have a leg removed, unfortunately. But working with CGL and with Shelter, both in partnership, has enabled him to get his drug use in check. Then working with Shelter, he's been able to get his homelessness sorted. The Shelter Navigator has then gone to appointments with that client all around the network to make sure that they attended, as they were previously really nervous and fearful of attending appointments. So that sort of partnership working has really helped. And that Shelter Navigator has also put them in touch with Narcotics Anonymous. So the two organisations have worked very much hand in hand to make sure that client gets a full wraparound support that they needed, as opposed to just simply dealing with the issues that their organisations deal with individually. They've come together and they've worked for that client. The client themselves are actually looking now to find paid or voluntary work where possible within service provision in Birmingham. So a huge leap forward from the position they were in to now looking for work or voluntary work is fantastic for that client, yeah.
Neelam Butt, Liaison and Diversion Service Manager at Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health Trust, is also seeing amazing results in the criminal justice system.
So as part of our outreach team, when we were kind of developing it, we were looking at actually what are the vulnerabilities and how do we make the most of the resources that we have. One of the things that was kind of a really common sense approach was actually, rather than us trying to replicate something, why don't we look at third sector organisations that are already doing it? And it would make more sense for us to commission them to just do it for us as well, rather than keeping it in trust and delivering a cheaper service, but not maybe delivering it as good as what, for example, Shelter's delivering the peer mentor model. So that's where we kind of started looking at pathway agencies. Now, as part of our team, we have a pathway with Anna Wim, who's our women's pathway. We have Shelter as our peer mentor. And then we work with the No Wrong Door Network here. We have a member of staff based here. And I think that's been invaluable in terms of getting people the right support very, very quickly. We're not kind of confined by any waiting lists. It means people can work collaboratively. So Lindsay, for example, has access to Shelter resources as well as the NHS resources. So that in itself works really well together when you're looking at training and developing people. For service users as well, you know, if Lindsay's working with someone and then a mental health need arises, rather than her having to go through all the channels of GP and getting a referral, us as practitioners working in the NHS can just send an email to, can you get this person an appointment? So it's working collaboratively helps open doors much quicker than a service user having to find the pathway themselves. So that's one of the kind of major positives of having those relationships, really. And aside from that, it opens up kind of a lot of networking opportunities, not just for staff, but also the service users. So not necessarily people that are working with us, but if we've got someone on our caseload who aspires to work with people to help them in their rehab, for example, you know, we could quite easily go to shelter and say, you know, have you got any workshops running in relation to substance misuse that we can send one of our kind of service users on just to see what it's like? Or have you got anyone who's peer mentoring that has this background that we could maybe tap into? But without that pathway being there, we wouldn't be able to do that, you know, because it is those relationships that are so, so important. In terms of for Birmingham, certainly what we see is that it does get people quicker access. In comparison to when they say they'll either self-refer or they kind of will say that actually I'm not ready now, I'll do it myself in a couple of days' time. But if they do unfortunately then come back the criminal justice route and we pick them up again, there's been no progress, or they've waited 3 months for an appointment and no one's been chasing that up on their behalf. For example, we've had cases where they might not have engaged on the first point, but the second point has come down where the GP has referred them in and they've told us, you know, I went to my GP and nothing was done about it, but we just need to check the system to see the referral was received. Your appointment is on this day with this consultant and you just need to turn up on the day. And just something as simple as giving them that information changes their outlook. And I think a lot of the times, you know, letters can get missed because they change, you know, addresses, or, you know, their phones get lost or they're not kept up to date. And those are the simple things we can help to do.
My name is Lindsay. I'm a peer mentor for the L&D service. So I lived in Norfolk and fell into addiction very early, around the age of 14. And that carried on through my life. Had a few traumatic events and things like that that spiralled still further and further. And then I moved to Nottingham, got into a rehab, got myself cleaned and carried on progressing from there. And now I've ended up in Birmingham working in this role, supporting people through similar things. Obviously, I went down the offending route, things like that, everything that comes along with addiction.
Your experience when you were still, you know, living in addiction and trying to find recovery, did you have anything like this to help you?
No, there was nothing, unfortunately. There was support workers, but it wasn't. There was no one. I think it's hard for these people who are entrenched and things like that to actually engage with professionals. It does come across easier if it's like someone like myself who maybe doesn't come across as formal sort of thing. I think if the support that L&D offer had been offered to me, I would have been able to get myself back on track a long time before. My referrals will come from the custody suite or the courts. And these people will be entrenched. They'll be like three out of the four needs or four, whatever, the more severe cases, who are finding it hard to engage with services and things like that. So it will be my role to go and see them in custody, in the courts, introduce myself, tell them what service I'm able to provide, which can be, it's never ending. Like, you can offer them basically support on every level. I'll send out an initial appointment where I'll go to a home visit them there, find out what support they require, and then support them in achieving them goals or whatever needs that they need. And that could be accessing community mental health teams, things like that, which I will support them to the appointments and things like that, which they could find it hard to actually get there to.
I wanted to know from Natalie Allen how great the uptake of collaborative working is in Birmingham and what still needs to be done.
I think there is a lot of fantastic work happening, and I think that over the last sort of 6 or 7 years, I have seen a massive improvement in the city's approach to how we work with people, and certainly that push for partnership work and collaboration. If you take something like the city's homeless partnership board as an example, that kind of message and that strategic vision for how we want to work with the most vulnerable in our city is absolutely filtering through, and I think that is absolutely fantastic, and we're definitely moving in the right direction. But I think there are some fundamental things that need to change to better support the client group. And I think from a frontline service perspective, we have some partners who are signed up to delivering this approach and who, yes, I believe absolutely are making massive steps towards doing that. So the examples that I gave earlier was where people were really committed to that approach and were dedicated to doing the best by that service user. I think where we tend to still find kind of challenges around collaboration are where we have things that are commissioned in such a way that collaboration is actually made more difficult. So if we are told through commissioning structures that you have to use certain referral pathways or you have to deliver X, Y, and Z, but actually that isn't conducive to collaboration, can make things much more complicated. I certainly feel on a personal level that things like payment by results contract, payment by outcomes contracts really fundamentally make collaboration a challenge, because you're in a situation where organisations have to claim an outcome to sustain their service delivery, and you start to get that competitiveness, which actually in this type of work is really unhelpful, because if people start to cling to their service users and hold their service users close and not do the best by their service user with working other people, then they potentially might not achieve their outcome, because I would consider that outcome to be a partnership outcome or a city outcome. But if they can't tick a box to say that it was their outcome, they don't get their funding. So I think there's something there for me, which particularly when it comes to the multiple and complex needs client group, we really, really need to look at. I think also in terms of collaboration, we still haven't really cracked allowing people to work together in partnerships. I still think when we commission in silos, and I still think to an extent that when we commission services, we don't see people with multiple and complex needs necessarily as a protected group. So I think what happens sometimes is we commission a service based on whether or not we think that it's suitable for the majority of the people that will use it. And we don't necessarily do like a bit of a sense check about whether or not that provision in the way that we are commissioning it or delivering it or even responding to it in terms of a provider in a bid, whether or not what we're offering is suitable for that group. And I think that sometimes means that those individuals will fall through the gap, because the kinds of services that we are creating may not be suitable for their needs, because they might not hit the right criteria particularly. It sort of comes back to what I was saying earlier about looking at a whole person. You might not really understand someone's level of vulnerability by just looking at one area, by just looking at their homelessness or just looking at their substance misuse. You might not realise how vulnerable they are. And again, then it's a kind of sometimes a question mark in thinking, well, why is that person not engaging with the service that looks fit for purpose on paper? But we have to remember that people are complicated and the system is even more complicated. And I really still think that we should approach it that we are responsible for delivering effective services and commissioning effective services to meet their needs, and stop trying to expect them to engage with us and place the blame on individuals for not engaging. You know, we have that classic thing whereby if you maybe don't attend two or three appointments, you get a letter to say that your place is no longer open. I would just love to see something like that completely scrapped, because actually for me that's the concern. They're the people that we should be worried about, those that aren't engaging. But I think things like capacity and service flexibility again are an issue. So if your service is bursting at the seams because you're oversubscribed, I fully understand why you wouldn't be able to concentrate on the people that aren't yet through your door when you've got 200 people on your waiting list. And I understand that if your service is commissioned to do a particular job and that's what, you know, you're going to be paid for delivering, that being able to be as flexible as you might want to be with a particularly chaotic or vulnerable service user might be very, very difficult for you. So there's still a lot of work that we need to do to get it right, but I am really kind of heartened by the messages that I'm hearing across the city in terms of the way that things are moving. And I think in particular the Birmingham Changing Futures Together partnership and the organisations that we're working with are certainly now starting to have that sort of voice and that influence within the city to make sure that this group are considered and are thought about, which is going to be really important moving forward.
In our next episode, we look at the benefits and value of using people with lived experience within services. If you found this episode useful, please subscribe to the podcast, and we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review. Thank you for listening to Changing Futures, the podcast aimed at helping Birmingham's most vulnerable people live more fulfilled lives. Mm-hmm.